The scripture reading is from Mark chapter 5, 21 to 43. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. Because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding around you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. Gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this, and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of the Lord.
So, 4 weeks we have been exploring this spiritual practice of service, not simply as something that we do, but as a way of life that forms us into people who increasingly reflect the character of Jesus. The first week, we looked at service as love. We said that service is one of the practical expressions of Christ-like love and one of the ways that God's future kingdom breaks into the present. Last week, we looked at hiddenness and how much of the service that forms us doesn't happen through big service projects or grand acts that get public recognition. In fact, it happens rather quietly in ordinary relationships and responsibilities that make up most of our ordinary lives. So today we come to another aspect of service that most of us probably don't think about often. I've titled today's message as "Available to be Interrupted." Available to be interrupted. And one of the things that I've noticed about service is that it rarely arrives at the most convenient time. We tend to imagine service as something we schedule for. We sign up for a volunteer activity. We put the service project on our calendar. We intentionally set time aside to help someone in need. And these are all great things that we should do more of when we can. But much of the service Jesus calls us to doesn't arrive as something we've scheduled. It arrives unexpectedly, interrupting whatever we think is important at the time. And we all know what that feels like. You're trying to finish your project before the deadline. You're heading out the door for an appointment or even to church this morning. You're already running late for a meeting, and your family, you're finally ready to sit down with your cup of coffee to tackle things that you've been putting off all morning. And then that text message comes. Phone call rings. Child knocks on the door. Mom, Dad, I'm sick. I don't feel good. Or your little brother, your little sister come up while you're playing with your friends. Like, can you play with me? Do you have, or your coworker swings by your office and, or your cubicle and says, do you have a moment to chat? See, most of us instinctively experience these kinds of moments as interruptions. We assume that whatever we already are doing is the most important thing, and this new demand is just distracting us from it. But what if those interruptions aren't always obstacles? What if at least sometimes they are actually invitations? What if that interruption is actually where God is inviting us to pay attention, where God is at work? Our passage this morning is one of the best stories in the gospel. So I know, kids, sometimes you're in your own story, but I just invite you to stay with this story as much as you can. We're just going to spend our time imagining ourselves in this story. It's a story of Jairus' daughter and the woman with the bleeding condition. And instead of focusing on the miracles primarily themselves, I want us to pay attention to something else. I want us to notice Jesus. More specifically, I want us to ask the simple question that I've been thinking about all this week. Why does Jesus seem so free to stop when most of us feel the pressure to keep on moving? Why does Jesus feel so free to stop when all of us feel that pressure and urgency to keep moving? Why does Jesus seem to be available to be interrupted when we do everything to avoid being interrupted? So enter the scene together with me again. Jesus has crossed the Sea of Galilee, and a large crowd gathers around him, and out of that crowd comes one man named Jairus. And Mark tells us that he is one of the leaders of the synagogue, so he's got respect, he's got recognition in the community, but respect and recognition and titles, they don't matter when your daughter is dying. Jairus falls at Jesus' feet and pleads, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." You can almost feel the urgency of Jairus. His daughter is dying. He's desperate. He's done everything that he can, and he's at the mercy of Jesus, and every minute matters. If you've ever rushed someone to the hospital or waited in the waiting area during an important surgery, or you've received a phone call that has changed your day or even your life, you know what this feels like. Nothing else seems important. Every second counts to get the help that you want. And everyone in this story understands what needs to happen next. Jairus knows where Jesus needs to go. The disciples know where Jesus needs to go. The crowd knows where Jesus needs to go. Jesus has one priority in front of him, and everyone is moving towards Jairus' house. And then, just as the story is beginning to gain momentum, everything comes to a halt. Mark tells us that a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came before him, and that she suffered a great deal. For 12 years, she had suffered physically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually. She had spent all that she had on getting help for her condition, and instead of getting better, it only got worse. And according to Jewish law, her condition also meant that she was ceremonially unclean, which meant she couldn't participate in the life of community. 12 years living on the outside, 12 years of isolation, 12 years of suffering, 12 years of not being able to participate in the life that everyone else is doing, 12 years of becoming more and more invisible. Some of you might know what that kind of feels like. Maybe you don't share her condition, but you've lived with something that simply will not go away. Chronic pain, debilitating illness, depression, anxiety, a marriage that remains incredibly difficult. Or you've prayed for your child for year after year after year, and nothing seems to change. The burden only seems to increase. And in fact, it's become so familiar that even well-meaning people that care about you stop asking you about it. Not because they don't care, but because they don't know what else to say. And over time, you just begin to feel that your struggle, your life, just becomes more and more invisible. This woman had heard about Jesus, and she thinks, if only I could just touch his cloak, I will be healed. She's not looking for a conversation. She's not looking to be the center of attention. She certainly does not want to delay Jesus because she knows what's happening. The whole crowd is moving towards Jairus' house. She simply reaches through the crowd, touches the edge of his clothes, and immediately her bleeding stops. We're told her suffering stops. If this were a movie, this is where the scene might climax. The miracle has happened. The music swells. The woman quietly disappears into the crowd and walks off while Jesus continues on with the crowd to Jairus' house. That's what everyone expects. That's certainly what Jairus hopes. But what does Jesus do? Stops. And not only does he stop, he turns around and asks, who touched me? And the disciples, they can hardly believe the question. Jesus, you see this crowd around you. They're pressing against you. And you ask who touched you? You can almost hear the impatience in their voices. Jesus, everyone is touching you. We don't have time for this. We got to get you somewhere that you need to be. And if we're honest, I think we probably sympathize with the disciples. Jesus, why aren't you going where I want you to go? A little girl is dying. Do you not know? Do you not hear? Do you not see the situation, how dire it is? Every moment matters. This woman has already been healed. Let's just keep moving. Jesus' followers, I think most of us read this story, we often become fascinated by what Jesus says next, that he sensed power going out from him. This fascinates us, right? We think, oh, what does this have to do with miracles? Is this what it feels like to experience supernatural power? And those are interesting questions, but I don't think they're what Mark wants us to get at. They distract us from the question Mark really wants us to ask. See, the miracle has already happened. She touched Jesus' clothes. She was healed. Her suffering ended. Jesus is already, and Mark has already told us many ways that Jesus has demonstrated God's remarkable power so far in the Gospel of Mark. So the more surprising part of the story isn't that Jesus healed this woman simply by touching his clothes. The more surprising thing is that Jesus stops. Why? Why does Jesus stop when everyone else wants to keep him moving? Why risk delaying this urgent mission to go to Jairus' house to save his daughter? Why insist on finding out who this woman is when she clearly does not want to be known and she wants to disappear into the crowd? Why does Jesus stop? Because Jesus knows that she just doesn't need She doesn't just need healing. She needs to be seen. He refuses to let her slip away anonymously. He waits. He looks for her. He calls her out. And when she finally comes forward, she's trembling with fear. He doesn't rebuke her for interrupting him. The first word Jesus says to her isn't woman, it's daughter. Before he restores his body, he has already restored her dignity. Before he continues on his way, he makes sure she knows that she has been seen and known and welcomed into this life that God has created. But all the while, Jairus waits. And I think this is where the story begins to confront us. We naturally describe what happened here as an interruption. Jesus was on his way to doing something important onto Jairus' house, and this woman interrupted him. But I wonder if that's how Jesus actually saw it. It certainly looked like an interruption to Jairus. It certainly looked like an interruption to the disciples and to the crowd around him. But does it ever occur to us that Jesus doesn't seem to consider this as an interruption? Perhaps that's because from Jesus' perspective, this wasn't an interruption. It was simply the next person that the Father had placed before him. And while Jesus was still speaking, the worst possible news arrives. Some people come from Jairus' house with a message that no parent ever wants to hear. Child is dead. Why bother the teacher? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine how Jairus must have felt in that moment? Why, Jesus? If only you didn't stop, she might be alive. If only we didn't delay for this conversation, you could have been there. I think if we're honest, that's a fear that many of us might carry. We worry that if we stop for someone, something more important will suffer. If I pause for this conversation, I'll fail at completing what I'll have to neglect something else, another responsibility. If my plans are interrupted, I won't be able to accomplish what I set out to do. We assume that availability always comes at the expense of something that matters more. And in the story, it seems that the fear has been confirmed. The interruption has consequences. The delay costs something. It costs this girl her life. What does Jesus do? He doesn't apologize. He doesn't explain why he stopped. He just simply turns to Jairus and says, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." And Jesus continues on to Jairus' house. He takes the little girl by the hand and says, "Little girl, get up." This interruption had not placed Jairus beyond the reach of God's grace. The father had not lost control simply because Jesus was stopped. Jesus never seems to be anxious about stepping outside of God's will. He's not torn between two very good competing missions, wondering, "Oh, did I make the right choice? Did I make the wrong choice? Why did I stop? Why didn't I listen to everyone around me?" Instead, he simply responds faithfully to the person that the Father has placed before him, trusting that God's purposes are larger than everyone else's urgency, larger than what he feels. I think this begins to answer our question. Jesus isn't free to stop because he has less to do or he's this mystical person that just floats around. If anything, his mission is more important than ours. He's not lacking direction or purpose. He's remarkably intentional. But his intentionality is not rigid. It has made him attentive. He holds his agenda loosely enough to recognize the Father's agenda when it appears before him in the form of an interruption. Which means what we often think of, I got to be more available, is decrease my busyness. The opposite of availability is not busyness. The opposite of availability is becoming so consumed by our plans, by our agenda, that we can no longer recognize God's agenda when it appears before us. Look again at everyone in the story. Jairus has an agenda. He wants his daughter well. The disciples have an agenda. Get our rabbi to do this miracle. The woman has an agenda. Get healed, heal out. Don't let anyone recognize it. Jesus has an agenda too. But unlike everyone else, he holds it loosely enough to recognize when the Father is doing something in the present moment. And that raises another question. If this is what Jesus is like, where does he get this kind of attentiveness from? Is Jesus simply more compassionate than the rest of us? Is he more patient because he's God in the flesh? I don't think that's what the Gospels are trying to teach us. Jesus repeatedly, we're told, withdrew to pray. He stepped away from the crowds to spend time with the Father. He didn't withdraw because he wanted to escape people, because he was an introvert. He withdrew so that when he returned to people, he could pay attention to the Father, how to love these people well. This, I think, is why Jesus seems so free to stop. His life isn't governed by the urgency around him, the tyranny of the urgent. It's governed by attentiveness to the presence of the Father within him. I think this brings us to the good news of the Christian faith. See, Jesus doesn't teach us these things to teach us how to embody these things, to teach us how to be available. He's not just a good example of how to be interrupted without being frustrated. He embodies interruption in the incarnation. See, God doesn't remain distant from us, distant from the interruptions of human life. He actually enters into them. He enters into the interruptions of sickness, interruptions of grief, interruptions of conflict and suffering, and ultimately, the ultimate interruption in human life, which is death itself. God, Jesus enters into death itself. Reveals the very character of God. Friends, we worship a God who moves towards us, not away from us, willing to be interrupted. A God who makes himself available to us when we had nothing to offer back to God in return. And because Christ has first come to us, his Spirit is now at work, forming us to become people who can increasingly resemble him. That's why we do these practices. Prayer and scripture and Sabbath and fasting, generosity, now script service. We do these things not so nobody interrupts us, not to isolate us from being interrupted, but so that when interruptions come, as they inevitably do, we increasingly recognize them as invitations to participate in what God is already doing around us. And as I prepared the sermon this week, I realized how much I need this formation myself. One of the things I've been sharing with the elders over the past several months is how much Evan's death has changed my own emotional capacity. Before he died, I thought of being available was simply a matter of managing my schedule. If I could create enough margin, then I could be present with people. What I've discovered is availability is not just about time, but it's also about capacity. By disposition, many of you know I'm very logical and efficient in things I like to do. I move quickly, I like solving problems, and moving on. And even before ministry, that's how God wired me. And over the years, one of the ways Jesus has formed me is teaching me to slow down. Slow down enough to sit with people, to listen, to bear burdens with them that couldn't easily be solved. And being a pastor has been one of the ways that Christ actually has shaped this part of my life. But since losing Evan, I've noticed something else has changed. I still care deeply when people share their struggles with me. But I can also feel how quickly my emotional reserves are depleted. Within just a few minutes, I can feel that internal pull to move on, tell them how to solve the problem, get on with my day. It's one of the hidden ways that I know Christ is still doing his work in my own life. And preparing for this sermon has reminded me that what I need most isn't simply a lighter schedule. What I need is connecting with God enough to recognize how God is forming my life to be more like Jesus's. I need to learn what it means to abide and remain in union with him little by little so that my capacity to love, and to notice, and to carry burdens might be strengthened once again. And I suspect I'm not the only one in this room, but I appreciate your prayers for me. But maybe your capacity has been diminished by grief or chronic illness or caring for an aging parent. Or maybe it's just capacity diminished by years of carrying responsibilities that no one else ever notices. I want you to hear this. This is not a sermon to tell you to try harder. Say yes to every interruption that comes your way. That's not the point of this message or this series. It's an invitation to place yourself once again before Jesus and allow him to continue to form you into the kind of person that recognizes God's invitations even when they come as interruptions in your life. Service rarely, as we continue practicing the way of Jesus, as we continue to learn to be apprentices of Jesus, I want to invite you to pay attention to the first moment when something disrupts your plans. What is that immediate response? Probably is, oh, this is so annoying. How can I get back to what I was doing? But I invite you this week, when those moments come, because I'm sure they will, it might even happen right after the service ends, pause long enough and to ask, God, what are you doing here? What are you up to? Is this really an interruption or is this an invitation? See, service rarely arrives as a scheduled appointment. More often, it arrives disguised as an interruption. And the goal isn't simply to become better at responding to interruptions, to become kinder and nicer and more patient. That's not the point of this. The point is to become more like Jesus. And as we abide in him, may we discover what once we called interruptions have perhaps become some of the very places where God invites us to see God's kingdom quietly breaking into the ordinary moments of our lives. Let's pray. Jesus, I think I can speak for most of us when we say we don't like to be interrupted. Help us with your spirit to pay attention to you and your voice. How some of those interruptions are actually invitations to join with what you are already doing, so that we might become more like your love and presence here on earth. Teach us that way, this way of attentiveness for your glory. In your Son's name.